Good afternoon. I call the Senate Health and Social Services Committee to order at 1:31 p.m. on Tuesday, March 2nd, 2021. We're meeting in room 205 of the Capitol Building. Please remember, folks here, to silence your cell phones as a courtesy. Committee members present today are Senator Reinbold, Senator Hughes, Senator Costello, Senator Begich, and myself, Senator Wilson. We have a quorum to do business today. This afternoon, we'll hear from two of the governor appointees for the State Medical Board. Then we'll take an overview and invited testimony of Senate Bill 21, the Licensed Mobile Intensive Care Paramedic, sponsored by Senator Rivac. And we'll hear an overview and take testimony of Senate Bill 78, Healthcare Services by Telehealth, sponsored by the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Excuse me. First, we'll hear from the State Medical Board appointees. And we'll take them in alphabetical order. First, we have David Boswell of Fairbanks, and then we also have Larry Daughtry of Eagle River. We'll ask the appointees to put themselves on the record, speak briefly on their qualifications, as we have that here, committee members, and their desire to serve on the board, and we'll take questions from committee members. With that, Mr. Boswell, are you online?
I am.
All right. The floor is yours if you want to speak for a few moments of your qualifications and just your general interest on the board.
All right. Thank you, honored senators, for serving in the great state of Alaska. My name is David Boswell. I am the father of 8 children, 7 sons, 1 daughter. I've been the senior minister for the Northern Lights Church of Christ in downtown Fairbanks for the past 16 years. And over that period of time, I've had the opportunity to volunteer in numerous capacities throughout the community and in the state. With the Fairbanks Food Bank, I've done a lot of visiting and singing for the residents of both the Denali Center and the Pioneer Home here in Fairbanks. In this time, I've been a foster parent for 5 years of 9 different children, from whom I adopted 4 of my children. I was a past member of the Governor's Council for Disabilities and Special Education, which introduced me to councils in the state, and it provided me with the opportunity to volunteer and serve on the Alaska State Medical Board as a public member. I've had many opportunities in the past year to utilize various medical facilities in the past 16 years. I've always been an active and interested member in this community. And as you're all aware, we haven't really had a typical introduction to state boards, as we were appointed at a time that was really unique to the state of Alaska and really to the nation and world as a whole. But beginning last March, I have actively participated as the secretary of the medical board. I was just asked at our last meeting to continue filling that role. I've had the opportunity over the course of the past 12 months to meet with this board, perhaps more in that 12-month period than any previous four-year medical board was asked to meet due to the needs of the emergency. So we began with weekly meetings in order to prepare us for the impending necessity of formulating emergency regulations in order to meet the needs of the pandemic. I have been through some incredible trainings that were provided by both medical board legal representatives as well as by the administrative executive staff over the past year. I've attended the Federation of State Medical Board Zoom conference this past year and have been introduced to the national issues facing other state medical boards, and have gained access to numerous resources that I'll be able to utilize in the future should similar issues need to be addressed in our state. So even though I didn't realize the vast quantity of time that was being asked of me when I began this position 1 year ago yesterday, I believe it was all worthwhile and rewarding use of time, attention, and energy. I personally have grown incredibly through the past year, and I look forward to the opportunity to continue serving over the remainder of my term. Again, I'm David Boswell, and I would appreciate your support for serving on this important board. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Reinbold, and then followed by Senator Begich.
Thank you. You have an incredible testimony, Mr. Boswell, so that's really, really neat to hear. I do have some questions in regards to what exact role have you been playing in regards to the disaster response, and what's your take on the executive branch response to the disaster declaration that's been going on about a year now?
I'm sorry. learned a lot about the inner workings of the...
So, I am so sorry, Mr. Boswell, if you were continuing your testimony. We did have to take an at ease there. We had some sound difficulties here, and so if you could start again to answer Senator Reinbolt's question.
Sure. Sorry about that. I don't know how much I was talking and not being heard.
If you can start over from the beginning, that would be wonderful. Like I said, it wasn't nothing on your side. I think it was our technical audio difficulties on our side here in Juneau.
Okay. I obviously began this during the beginning of the epidemic. It just beeped on me. Can you still hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And so at the beginning of our term, we began learning how to do emergency regulations even before we learned how to do typical regulations as a state board. And I think that was helpful and useful in that we as a board were able to appropriately deal with the needs for telehealth and added telehealth medicine in the state of Alaska during the course of the pandemic. We have had the opportunity to work with the current and changing needs of the PDMP, or the Prescription Drug Monitoring Program, in the state of Alaska. I have, as the secretary, I had to step in and chair part of one of the meetings when our chair was unable to participate. I've had incredible guidance from the executive administrators as well as the trainings that were provided. Does that sort of answer your question, Senator Reinbold?
Yes, Senator Reinbold.
Okay, not exactly. I just basically, I understand, you know, some of the administrative work that you did. I just wanted to know overall in regards to what do you think the response has been? How do you feel, you know, how's the collateral, you know, in regards to our schools, our economy, all that, the impacts, the global impacts? And then in particular, I know that I'm diverting right now a little bit, but because the medical board, it's so important to have ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine. I don't believe it had to do with the pharmacy board, but more the medical board. I just want to make sure they had access to the appropriate treatments that they wanted to use. Did you hear anything in regards to the medical board or any issues or concerns with that?
I'm struggling to hear you with the audio. If you could, and it was particular with the prescription drug, I think, that you were referencing.
Yes, and Rebel, if you can repeat one more time.
Okay. All right. Okay, so basically, in general, I just wanted to know what your feeling about the administration's response and the medical community in general, just the entire response to the disaster declaration. Let me start there. Did you hear me?
Sure, yes. So in general, I was...
Again, we apologize to those folks watching along on at home, and to yourself again, Mr. Boswell. Again, there's nothing that we believe that you've done, but if you are in speakerphone, if you could take us off of speakerphone and use a handheld, your device handheld might be a little bit better for us. Are you still with us there?
This is David Boswell. I got disconnected, so I called back in, and they put me back through. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you now. If you're on speakerphone, if you could take us off of speakerphone, that might help us a bit as well.
I have never been on speakerphone.
Okay. Then, yeah. Then we'll continue on here. And if we could go
a little... I was answering Senator Reinbold's question. I believe that the state medical board has done an excellent job of responding to the emergency declaration in all of its facilities that was appropriately needed.
Right, Senator Reinbold?
Thank you. That's good to hear, because I have not gotten any feedback in regards to the medical board. Do you know if they've had any issues at all getting ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine or some of the medications that have been proven to be very effective against COVID-19?
I don't think that's even under the purview of us to be acquiring medications like that.
Through the chair.
Yes.
So So in regards to the pharmacy board would typically allow for, will obviously deal with medications and things, but the medical board deals with licensures, correct?
Correct.
Right, and I just wanted to know if there was, if you had, you obviously haven't heard of any concerns or issues with that. Just clearing the air, just making sure.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Senator Begich.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Mr. Boswell, just a couple of questions that I want to ask you. The first one is, as I recall when we were talking last year, the executive secretary position of the board was vacant. And I'm curious how, A, if the position is still vacant, you're the secretary now of the board. So I'm just curious if the position of the executive secretary, which was the paid position, is still vacant. And if it is vacant, is that putting a burden then on the board, or how is it affecting things? For example, the board, because the position has been vacant, I know has been having to examine each physical license, each physician's license. And so I'm just curious, is it vacant still? And if so, how is that impacting the work of the board? And then corollary to that question is the board continuing as members of the board to examine each of these license applications?
Sure. When I began, Ms. Alicia Jones was the executive assistant for the state medical board. She did an excellent job. It was not until this past fall that she stepped down, and that position was immediately filled by Ms. Cher Zinn, who did an excellent job of transition for us and has prepared the transition for Ms. Natalie Norberg, who is the current executive administrator, being that paid position that I believe you're referring to. And over the course of that time, we have, I believe, worked seamlessly transitioning. It's actually been above and beyond what I could have hoped for. We didn't ever have an abundant burden on ourselves as board members, and it appears that everything was taken care of behind the scenes by the staff.
Follow-up, Senator?
Second question.
Yes. Chairman.
Just second question then. You know, as you know, the governor's disaster declaration expired a few weeks ago. Under that disaster declaration, there was emergency powers the board had emergency powers to issue emergency medical licenses. I'm just wondering, they also, when it came to the prescription drug, the PDMP, the prescription drug maintenance
monitoring program,
that there was a requirement that there is a requirement that doctors sign up for that program make sure that they sign up for that program. That doesn't always happen. Both of those under the emergency powers, you had provisions to deal with that. So have those been affected at all by the expiration of the emergency order? And if not, why not? And if so, how?
At our last meeting, we actually spoke to the PDMP compliance issue. And with this current year's re-registering of doctors and physicians, we've had an incredible number of compliance. It's increased significantly. And with that, we also have been discussing ways to make it more efficient and to make sure that all of the physicians that are registering with the PDMP are aware of what then the expectation is following that. One of our board members has drafted a letter to speak to that. Our executive administrator has also drafted a letter that will be sent to each of the physicians to help them understand the two-step process better so that our compliance will not only maintain where it's at, but hopefully improve within the next, 2-year cycle.
There were two questions really there. You've mentioned that compliance is up. I'm curious what the percentage is now then. And then secondarily, I mentioned that the disaster declaration has expired and you had the power to issue emergency medical licenses. And I'm curious what the impacts of that emergency order expiring are. What are the impacts that you have noted, or are there impacts?
The impacts that I'm familiar with are that everyone that had an emergency license issued to them, that license is still good until that emergency licensure is finished, but they have a period of time to transition that to a regular license. So that was a very useful and helpful tool during the emergency declaration, and it's a transition piece that will, those that want to keep it will continue and go through the process of normal licensure, and those that don't will let it expire.
And the compliance percentage on PDMP, Mr. Chairman?
I don't have that number in front of me, I'm sorry, but I do know that they presented it to us, and so that could be figured out through the executive administrator.
Yeah, we're going to get that data. We already have a request in for the PDMP information from Director Chambers.
Yep.
On another bill, another issue.
Excellent. Is that any more questions?
All right, seeing none. Thank you for your time again, Mr. Boswell, and sorry for the technical difficulties we had earlier.
Thank you so much. I appreciate all you guys do for us.
All right. Next, we have Larry Daughtry from Eagle River. Doherty.
Yeah, Larry Doherty, I'm here.
All right. Larry, if you could provide a brief overview of your background and your interests of the State Medical Board, you can put yourself on the record, and you can begin when you're ready.
Happy to. Well, ladies and gentlemen of the committee, good afternoon. Thank you for your time and your consideration of my appointment to the State Medical Board. I came to Alaska in 2014, and it's been my privilege to serve my community in the capacity as a radiation oncologist. I came to Alaska after working for 2 years in academic medicine at the Mayo Clinic in Jacksonville, Florida. I completed medical school at the University of Utah in 2007, and this was followed by a residency in radiation oncology at Drexel University in Philadelphia. I also have a background as a firefighter and a paramedic in the years before and during medical school. Aside from my work in oncology, I have also practiced addiction and rehabilitation medicine in the past, but I now devote all of my time to radiation oncology at the Anchorage Radiation Oncology Center. As a matter of my own daily routine, I have difficult conversations with patients who face a disease, which for most is their very worst nightmare. It is my job to help people navigate during a time of crisis and to offer help in the way that I can and have been trained to do. Sometimes I'm able to help in a significant and life-saving way. Other times I feel paralyzed due to aggressive disease, which is not responsive to any treatment. Our state has faced its own type of nightmare this last year as we have confronted the challenges of the COVID-19 pandemic. As a result, our legislative body has at times been paralyzed, as evidenced by the delay in confirmation of state medical board appointees who have been actively working on the board for over a year now. The board has endeavored to help within the realm of its own abilities. We have worked to expedite emergency licensure to ensure providers can help during a time of crisis. We have crafted and approved guidelines for telemedicine. We have worked to optimize the workflow and skills of physician assistants and paramedics. All of this we have done and are doing as a service to our state. Just so anyone listening from the general public understands, the State Medical Board exists to protect the public and ensure that we have safe, qualified, and competent licensed healthcare professionals practicing in Alaska. We grant licenses, investigate complaints, and at times take disciplinary action when required and indicated. Serving on the board is, in the truest sense of the word, service. These are unpaid positions that can take up enormous time away from my medical practice, family, and other pursuits. My own service on the board is admittedly at times reluctant. Do I enjoy the regular meetings and the bureaucracy? No, I do not. Do I enjoy being in a position of making disciplinary actions regarding my peers? Definitely no, I do not. I serve on the board not for money or for power, but because I believe I can actually make a difference. Instead of being a critical voice from the sidelines, I am doing what I can to take action and be part of crafted solutions. Some of the things that honestly drive me a bit crazy about our current system and that I would like to try to help to fix are, first, our state is among the very slowest in terms of processing applications for licensure. I believe much of our system is antiquated, expensive, and should be modernized and made to run much more efficiently and much, much faster. Secondly, we have some well-intended laws in place that are flawed. namely surrounding the well-intended PDMP program. My hope is to be a voice which can convince this legislative body to fix some of these problems so that the board can do its job better. Despite these annoyances, Alaska is, in my opinion, the best place on earth to practice medicine. We need to continue to keep it great by maintaining high standards for who is granted licensure in our state and by maintaining high expectations for how our healthcare professionals conduct themselves. I appreciate your willingness to consider my formal appointment to the board. If you decide not to appoint me, I might actually breathe a sigh of relief. But if you choose to confirm me, I will continue to serve to the best of my ability for as long as I am able. Thank you.
Thank you. Sandra Reinbold.
Thank you. And Dr. Doherty, thank you so much for being willing to serve. You have an amazing degree, radiation oncology. It's got to be a tough, tough job. You have an incredible amount of education. And I want to say thank you also for bringing issues to the table that you want to help solve, which I think is incredibly impressive. So I'm just going to personally offer either myself or any member of the Health and Social Services, if we can do anything to help process applications better, I want to hear. I've gotten engaged in a lot of these over the years, and also in particular, you know, any including the WAMI program, and also the PDMP, if we can do something to help improve that, I personally wouldn't mind an email. And when we have the people before us, I'll certainly bring it up, because as the Chair Wilson said, that they're going to be coming before our committee, and I really want to be all ears. So I just want to reach out a hand, extend a hand, and say a listening ear, and thank you for being from Eagle River, and it's an honor to serve you.
I appreciate that, Senator Reinbold. Thank you so much. I think that we've shown over the last year that we can process applications quickly when we need to with emergency licensure, and I see no reason that we aren't equipped well enough to be able to really improve our process in significant ways. So I definitely will reach out. And to the PDMP, I actually crafted, together with another board member, Dr. Parker, who I think you'll hear from on Thursday, a resolution that we passed unanimously in our medical board last 2 weeks ago, which should be coming to all of you, that I would really ask for your support in looking at. It would require a very simple change in the law, which I think would increase compliance and increase utilization of the PDMP.
Thank you. Senator Baggage.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would, once again, thank you to Mr. Doherty for stepping up to be on the board. I'm assuming the PDMP change that they're talking about, you're working on some legislation, so I won't ask questions about that. Well, all right, so I have two questions. I'm trying to get around the idea of, you mentioned that the licensing process takes a considerable amount of time. Could you just very briefly walk us through that process so we understand what that process is? Because that'll help us frame the angle, the goal that you have on this board, which is to change these processes. Could you do that? And then possibly after you complete that, give us an idea of what the proposed change to the PDMP is that you want, that you're looking for? Because I think that will be helpful to us.
Oh, sorry. Were you finished?
Yes.
So state license process, as I understand it, when an applicant applies for licensure in the state of Alaska, we are comprehensive and thorough, as we should be, in vetting our candidates and do take all the steps to verify education and residency training and board scores and make sure that there's no adverse actions from other states, medical boards, disciplinary action, malpractice, all of those things, have a deep dive. To be honest with you, I other than seeing inefficiencies in the software process, I haven't been able yet to put my finger exactly on the pulse of why it takes us 6 and sometimes 8 months that was my own experience when I came to Alaska. It took 6 months, despite getting everything into the board very, very quickly, 6 months to receive my license. And I see that from colleagues who enter our state. Other states are able to do this in a matter of weeks. You know, some states in a matter of, you know, 1 to 2 weeks. Now, some of that might have to do with our own laws and policies in the board of reviewing every single application by board members. But I think that much of it has to do with a very antiquated system. I'll just give you a for instance. You know, I get on a monthly basis, you know, a dozen or so applications for licensure, and our administrative staff does a great job of gathering all the documentation for us, but it's handed to me in the equivalent of a giant stack of paper on my desk. It's given to me electronically, but in one giant PDF document that I have to scroll through. And so if there's, you know, one thing that I'm looking for, you know, why was this physician named in a lawsuit for malpractice? It's just very, very cumbersome to analyze and review that data. And I'm confident that other states have figured out better processes. There's also a federation of state medical boards that has a centralized system that I'm interested in exploring more. So I don't know what the answer is. I just know that other states do it much better, and it's something that I'm passionate about working with the board. With the PDMP, you know, the PDMP is a wonderful program. It's a wonderful tool, and I think has great potential to solve, and I think is already making a great impact in terms of the opioid crisis. We're seeing prescriptions for these drugs take a dramatic turn downward, as they should. But the main problem that I am seeing is the way that the law is written. Physicians are able to assign delegates to access the PDMP on their behalf. But the law stipulates that a delegate must hold a formal license under Alaska Statute 8. In our state, as opposed to other states, medical assistants don't hold a license. And on a very regular basis, we get complaints to the medical board that come to us through anonymous sources, but that if a well-intended physician who's trying to use the PDMP and doesn't understand that they can't assign a medical assistant as a delegate, well, now all of a sudden they have committed an offense that literally is a felony and has very harsh consequences associated with it. And our hands are a bit tied as a board because of the way that the law is written. My opinion and the text of the resolution you will be seeing soon, you know, physicians should be able to have delegates who they trust and who they assign at whatever level of training. You know, in my own office,
Dr. Doherty,
front desk, yes.
And we'll look forward to that resolution. Senator Begich has a follow-up.
Just a very quick one. I appreciate your candor and the information you're providing, because I think we can follow up on that. But my just my brief follow-up is, to be clear, this was the question I asked to the prior board member. You're reviewing the applications. So you're actually reviewing, you and other members of the board are reviewing the applications still.
We do a final review. Yeah, that's accurate. But it's our responsibility to really review that entire application. It's reviewed once, you know, by the administrative team that's putting it together, but it's our job to review it as a final review, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Sandra Sullivan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Dr. Doherty, I just wanted to say publicly that the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee has taken portions of the governor's disaster declaration, and as a courtesy to the process and a courtesy to the administration, we are reviewing the requests that his administration has made for changes in statute, and looking at it to determine whether or not we need to make our statutes COVID aware in certain cases, or provide some temporary changes that are needed as we work our way through the vaccination process of the pandemic. But I did want to say that there are several bills running through the process, one of which will be introduced today by my staff member Katie McCall. Another bill that I'd be happy to work with you through Senator Reinbold's office, but my office is working with licensure on a licensing bill. So there is a bill in the process. The intention as chair of the Labor and Commerce Committee is to ferret through why it is that it's taking so long and finding ways to expedite the process. We have emergency, locum tenant, temporary, and courtesy licenses, and I would be more than happy to work with you on suggestions that you have on how to speed that process up. And you can get my contact information through Senator Reinbold's office. So thank you, Dr. Doherty, for your service. We're so lucky to have talented Alaskans like yourself who are willing to provide the expertise and donate your time to making our state a better place to live and work.
Thank you so much. I look forward to working with you on that.
Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you, Dr. Doherty and Mr. Boswell, for your volunteerism and service to our state. Is there a motion to move these names out of committee? Senator Hughes.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to. I move the appointments of David Boswell and Larry Doherty to the State Medical Board be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. This does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of the individuals during any further sessions.
All right. Is no objection? We will take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. Back on the record. Next, we'll hear an overview and take invited testimony of Senate Bill 21, the Licensed Mobile Intensive Care Paramedic, sponsored by Senator Rivac. Here to speak to the bill are Senator Rivac's trustee staff and aides here. We have Seth Dugan and Kirk Kraft here to present the bill. Also available online is the litany of folks. We have Director Sarah Chambers from the Department of Commerce and Community Development. We have a few EMS program managers, Todd McDonald and Allison Nasher, for an emergency preparedness programmer. We also have an EMS training coordinator, Gene Wiseman. We have Clint Farr, the operations manager from Department of Health. Brian Webb is also here to testify as well. With that, we'll turn it over to either Derek or Seth.
All right, I'll give an introduction of the bill and then pass it on to Seth for a brief sectional analysis. Senate Bill 21 seeks to consolidate oversight of the emergency medical service system under a single agency to provide better peer and professional oversight. This has been years in the making through a deliberative process that has involved hundreds of stakeholders throughout the EMS community. It has been unanimously supported by the State Medical Board and has broad support from paramedics around the state. Currently, EMS oversight is split between the State Medical Board within the Department of Commerce and the EMS section with Department of HESS. This will transfer all paramedic licensure to the Alaska Emergency Medical Services Office in HESS, which is currently responsible for certifying EMTs, EMT instructors, EMT training, ground ambulance, medevac services, paramedic instructors, and paramedic training. This split arose because paramedics did not exist in Alaska before 1974. After 1974, the term mobile intensive care paramedic was created for the new scope of practice in Anchorage and Fairbanks fire departments. The emergency medical service within HESS didn't exist within Alaska code until 1981, when the responsibility to license and credential paramedics was placed under the State Medical Board. And in 1984, the EMS section became fully functional. However, the paramedic licensure still remained under the State Medical Board. SB 21 will not change the scope of practice, license requirements, or fee structure for the approximately 600 paramedics licensed in Alaska. Medical direction will be provided by the existing HESS Chief Medical Officer and the EMS Medical Directors Committee, comprised of 11 members specialized in emergency medicine, five of whom are required to have paramedic experience. Their existing data systems are able to incorporate paramedic licensure, making the move a seamless transition. Transferring oversight and licensure of mobile intensive care paramedics from the State Medical Board to HESS will fully integrate the EMS system and ensure it is robust, sustainable, and resilient so it functions optimally. Aligning all EMS services under a single agency better promotes public health and safety while also providing efficiencies through peer and professional oversight. And now I'll have Seth briefly go over the sectional.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Seth Duggan, staff for Senator Rivac. This bill has 19 sections which are primarily transferring authority from Title 8 Business and Professional Licensing to HESS in Title 18. Section 1 amends 08.64.107 to remove regulation of paramedic licensure from the medical board. Section 2 amends 08.64.170, allowing paramedics to practice medicine during Emergency Life-Saving Service under another law instead of under the Medical Board's authority. Section 3 amends 08.64.360 to remove paramedics. Section 4 amends 08.64.369 to change paramedics licensed under the Medical Board to those licensed under HESS for healthcare providers who must report certain injuries to the Department of Public Safety. Section 5 amends 12.55.185 to change paramedics licensed under the Medical Board to those licensed under HESS. Section 6 amends 18.08.075 to allow paramedics to provide emergency medical care. Section 7 amends 18.08.0880 to require HESS to adopt regulations establishing standards for paramedics for paramedic licenses. Section 8 adds a new paragraph 18.08.082 to add regulation of paramedic licensure to HESS. Section 9 amends 18.08.082 to clarify that HESS is the central certifying and licensing agency for emergency medical services. Section 10 amends 18.08.084 to prohibit a person from practicing as a paramedic without a license. Section 11 amends 18.08.086, adding the term license, provides civil immunity to licensed or certified emergency medical providers who are providing emergency medical service. They are not liable for civil damages unless it's gross negligence. Section 12, 18.08.089 is amended to clarify a paramedic is allowed to pronounce someone dead in certain circumstances. Section 13 adds a new paragraph to 18.08.200 to add the definition of mobile intensive care paramedic. Section 14 amends 29.45.050 to include mobile intensive care paramedics and a municipal property tax exemption. To clarify, this is only for volunteer EMS staff only. Section 15 amends 37.05.146 to add fees for licensure of paramedics to the list of fees collected by HESS. Section 16 repeals 08.64.366 and repeals 08.64.380 to remove emergency life-saving service and mobile intensive care paramedic. Section 17 amends the uncodified law to provide transitional authorities for those paramedics who received a license before this goes into effect and for HESS to adopt regulations for those who received licensure under the current statutes. Section 18 provides an immediate effective date for HESS to adopt regulations. Section 19 provides an effective date of January 1st, 2022. With that, we would be happy to answer any questions. We also have Health and Social Services on the line, as well as Brian Webb for specific questions related to paramedics.
All right. Thank you, sir, for your overview. We'll go to Senator Baggage and then Senator Reinbold and then Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two questions. The first is, anecdotally I've heard, and I always hesitate to put anecdotal information on the record, but I am going about to do so. Anecdotally, I heard that the process now for licensures for the EMTs, et cetera, takes a long time. Is this going to speed up that process in general? Will this speed up the process of licensure? I suspect it will, but I'm curious what your perspective is on that. And then secondarily, I noticed complete blank pages in the fiscal notes, at least for a couple of the pages. Could you explain if this is going to lead to any kind of cost savings, and if so, what those would be? There's zero fiscal notes in general, but what would they be?
For the record, Dirk, staff to Senator Rivak. Through the chair, Senator Begich. First question, speeding up the process. That was one of the primary reasons for introducing this legislation, as well as just housing all of these emergency medical personnel under one professional licensing statute. As far as the fiscal notes, there are zero fiscal notes. The departments, I believe, can absorb any potential changes in costs, but I would feel more comfortable having them answer that.
Okay. All right, we do have, let's see who the best person might be. We can start with Clint Farr or Gene Wiseman.
Thank you, Chair Wilson. For the record, I'm Clint Farr, Operations Manager for the Division of Public Health in the Department of Health and Social Services. And yes, we believe that we can absorb any costs associated with the transfer of the paramedic folks over to our division. We already have certification licensure processes in place. We already have the EMTs. We do thousands of EMTs annually, so the number of paramedics we feel will be able to absorb the current staffing and current processes.
Yes, Senator Baggage. Thank you.
Clint, just a real quick question related to that. When this bill's transferred over to your guys' jurisdiction, basically they removed themselves from the medical board's four meetings and the public comment that's offered in the medical board during that time period. Is there a provision or any way that people might be able to still make public comment relating through your division, relating to any issues they may have with, with the EMT service? Or you see what I'm getting at? That process disappears when you move them.
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Baggage, I do see what you're saying, and I think through the regulations process, we would work to ensure that the public has a way of getting to that, getting a way to comment on people who are trying to become a paramedic. And I would ask Todd McDowell if he had anything to add to that.
Mr. McDowell, are you on the, you can put yourself on the record if you have any statements to add?
Yes. Thank you to the chair for the record. I'm Todd McDowell, Office of the EMS Manager for the Division of Public Health and the Department of Health and Social Services. Thank you for the question, Senator Baggage. The answer to that question is that we do have a medical directors committee that is comprised of 11 physicians that specialize in emergency medicine for our medical directors for services. They have biannual meetings, and they are open to the public for public comment in regards to potential scope of practice issues or any other issues regarding medical direction.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, McDonald. Senator Reinbold.
Thank you, and this will be either to Seth or Dirk. I know you have a lifeline if you need it. But the first question is, if the governor's emergent or executive order to split HESS goes into place, which I think is going to go into effect roughly around the 17th of March if we don't act to stop it, do you know which commissioner you'd be going under? Start with there.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, HESS would probably be a better one to answer that.
I can answer with that. That would go into the Division of Health, if that's right, Mr. Farr. Mr. Farr, Clint Farr. If the bifurcation goes through, with the Division of Public Health stays under, would be under the Department of Health.
Thank you, Chair Wilson. For the record, I'm Clint Farr, Operations Manager for the Division of Public Health, and that is correct. The Division of Public Health would stay within the new department in whole.
Yes. Senator Reinbold.
Thank you. So I guess my suggestion to you gentlemen would be make sure you put conforming language, in if it's bifurcated into two different, because I know it's coming up soon. We have 60 days to act. If we don't act, it happens, okay? So my second question to you, and I know I'm jumping ahead. I understand that, but Chugiak Volunteer Fire Department is so important to our community, and if you guys would just allow them to weigh in, I think the language looks good, but they're so prominent in my community, and actually Senator Hughes as well, then that would be really, really terrific. I'd love to hear from them on their views on this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this can be for either Seth or for Dirk. I know that when the classification was first created, there wasn't a place to put it except under the state medical board, as you gave the history. But it's still, since the 80s, it could have been changed. I'm just wondering why it took so long and what all of a sudden made this. Was it the lengthy time to get licenses, or can you just explain why it took so long to make this change? Was there opposition, for instance, prior to making the change?
For the record, Dirk, staff to Senator Rivak, Mr. Chair, Senator, there's a long history there, and I briefly went over that, but I think Brian Webb is on the line. He could go into the, he's been a paramedic since around that time, so he could explain kind of what's gone into that process and why that, how it got mired as it did over these last years.
Yes, Mr. Webb, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here, and for the record, my name is Brian Webb. I'm a paramedic from Anchorage, and I'm also a former regional EMS training coordinator for South Central Alaska and the Aleutians, and I've been involved with this for a good number of years. And one of the old guys and almost one of the originals that are still left in active duty here. And, yeah, it was kind of bifurcated. One of the issues was with my generation of medics, there was a feeling that if we switched from licensure to certification, that somehow that would diminish our stature and diminish us as a medical practice as a whole. And pretty much my era has either pretty much retired or died off. And the newer generation is looking at much more streamlined ways to do things. And also, you know, easier ways to get things done, because the paramedic licensure process in Alaska is a pretty dramatic affair for most people that attempt it. And I've actually been working on this for the past 20 years, and started with started this process with Senator Birch over 3 years ago, and then was able to starting to get this going, because this seemed to be the most likely way. But the paramedics in Alaska have tried to do this in different ways over the years, and then finally the nexus came to be do it legislatively. So this hasn't appeared overnight, and so I hope I've answered the question.
Yes, Senator Hughes.
Yeah, thank you. So 20 years, well, we'll try to help you get it across the finish line and we can celebrate. Now, I have a question. Actually, my husband was in Vietnam and a medic, and came out and was an EMT and then a paramedic, and then went on later other schooling. But I am just wondering, what is the difference, just for our knowledge base, between an EMT and a paramedic? I know a paramedic is more advanced, and I noticed in the fiscal note that by moving the paramedics over, it's going to help create a smoother pathway for a career advancement for EMTs. So if you could explain the difference and then tell us how that might help the career path for EMT to expand their horizons. Thank you.
Back on the record, this is Brian Webb. I can pretty well answer that as well. And moving us over, consolidating it into one certification process, the Office of EMS is staffed by paramedics. They manage all the training certification already. That's already been mentioned. And that will help streamline the process, especially with people coming from out of state, with what we call the comedy process. And it will just simplify a lot of things, because we've got subject matter experts sitting at the desks already in the Office of EMS that know the process, that can work the process and streamline it a whole lot easier for folks in the future.
All right. Yep. Follow up, and then we'll have testimony.
If you could just explain, though, the difference as far as an EMT versus a paramedic, as far as the procedures
Sure.
they can do, the certification, the training, what's the difference, please?
Sure, and for the record, it's Brian Webb again, through the chair Senator Hughes, or excuse me, Senator Costello. The EMT-1, it's approximately between 110 and 160 hours to become an EMT, and there's no clinical experience that's truly required before you test out and get certified. For an EMT-2, you have to have been an EMT-1, a current EMT-1, and get at least another additional 50 to 80 hours of training, plus some additional skills, and also patient care verification as an EMT-1. And then for an EMT-3, you have to be a current EMT-2, and then an additional 50 to 80 hours of additional training, and then test out for there. Versus a paramedic, We're in classroom for over 1,000 hours, and then after that, after we graduate from our paramedic program, we have to spend approximately 650 hours in the lower 48 riding along with an advanced life support ambulance service. And then after that's all done, then we can come back, and then we test out for the National Registry of EMTs, who's the national body for us, and then we can apply for our state licensure. So it's a much longer road for us, and the skill sets are quite advanced versus from the EMT-1, EMT-2, and EMT-3 to paramedic. All
right. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. At this time, we're going to open up to public testimony. Anyone here in the room would like to testify on Senate Bill 21? Seeing none, we're going to go to Wilma Vinton from Fairbanks. You can state your name for the record and plan 2 minutes for your testimony.
Hi, can you hear me now?
Yes.
My headphones kept telling me I was muted and unmuted.
Yes, Wilma, if you can plan 2 minutes for your testimony and put yourself on the record, you can begin when you're ready.
Thank you. Mr. Chair. I am from Fairbanks, Alaska. My name is Wilma Vinton, as you know. I'm an MICP, have been since 2007, and an EMT since 1979. I'm also an Assistant Chief of EMS for Steese Volunteer Fire Department, and I thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of Senate Bill 21. I am an EMS instructor and past adjunct faculty for the UAF paramedic program. I currently work with EMTs and MICPs on a regular basis to assist them in acquiring and maintaining their certification and licenses as the assistant chief of EMS for Steve. I have also personally gone through both processes, first becoming certified as an EMT in Alaska for Montana 37 years ago, and then I became an MICP in 07. It's my humble opinion that this move from the medical board to the state office of EMS in HESS is an excellent way to streamline the licensing process. EMTs and MICPs work side by side, but when we're assisting our members in certifying and recertifying, we're working with two totally different agencies and processes. The state office of EMS is already providing certification to EMTs in an efficient and effective manner. Adding the MICPs, I don't believe, would stress that smooth process. Currently, EMTs are regularly certified within a week of testing, but definitely within 20 days, and I do not see a problem with MICPs being licensed in that same timeline. The current licensing process under the medical board can take several months. The medical board only meets quarterly to approve licenses, and there is a large amount of paperwork that is involved that has to go back and forth. The State Office of EMS has staff whose daily job is dedicated to certification and licensing. They have honed the process and will be as thorough as the process currently being provided by the medical board, albeit in a shorter amount of time. This shortened time frame is especially important to someone who is trying to get a job as a paramedic in Alaska. I strongly believe it would be a seamless move and would align the MICPs with EMS as they are in many other states. This will greatly benefit our students, our military leaving the service and wishing to practice in Alaska, and those from the lower 48 seeking employment in Alaska as paramedics. Thank you for your time, and I strongly urge you to support this bill.
Thank you, Wilma, for your testimony today. Next, we have Richard Etheridge here in Juneau. If you could put your name on the record and plan 2 minutes for your testimony, you may begin when you're ready.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for allowing me to testify on SB 21. I'm Richard Etheridge, and I'm speaking today on behalf of the Alaska Fire Chiefs Association. I'm also a full-time fire chief serving here in Juneau, where we provide emergency medical services and regularly hire paramedics. The Fire Chiefs Association fully supports SB 21. Quite often, we have to hire paramedics from out of state to fill staffing needs. Most of the time, it takes several months to get an out-of-state licensed paramedic licensed and able to work in our communities. This is in part due to the licensure being run through the medical board and their meeting schedules. This licensure is delayed if there's additional required documentation or if the paramedic's community they originate from is not very responsive. All of these delays place burdens on the local communities trying to get paramedics serving in the capacity they were hired for. Sometimes this is 6 to 8 months that we have someone in a position that we can't utilize them at their paramedic level. Transitioning paramedics under the control of state EMS will shorten the time frame in getting a license issued or a certification at this point without reducing the oversight to ensure quality control. It's also beneficial for the fire chiefs to have one state agency to work through for certifications, continuing education, and certification issues. The state medical board voted to support this transition, and the state EMS office is willing to accept the program. The Alaska fire chiefs fully support transitioning the paramedic licensure to certification under the state EMS office. Thank you for your time, and we hope to see you support SB 21.
Thank you. Next, we have had you for invited for questions, but Michael Levy.
Great. Yeah, thank you. Thank you to the committee for allowing me to testify. I'm Dr. Mike Levy. I'm an emergency medicine, also board certified in internal medicine, substance EMS.
Dr. Levy?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, no, you're going in and out. I'm not sure if you're in a bat cell reception area or.
It's entirely possible.
All right, you're coming in clear now. Just don't move and you may continue.
Okay, I'll keep this arm, my left arm up in the air, seems to be the ticket. I am medical director for emergency programs. Chief Medwide, EMS, and Anchorage for Kukiak Volunteer.
Dr. Levy, we're having a bad opportunity. I'm not sure. I don't think it's going to get any better here. If you want to help provide an email to the committee on your testimony, might be a better opportunity because we're not understanding your testimony verbally through our through the telephone.
No.
And we can. And so,
thank you.
If you want to do that, and for anyone else that's online following along, they can still send their testimony to shss@akleg.gov. Seeing no one else online, we will close public testimony. And are there any further comments to the bill sponsor at this time? Seeing none, Senator Reinbold.
Through the chair, I would just ask, the next referral is Labor and Commerce, it looks like. I would just ask that you weigh in with the Chugiak Volunteer Fire Department, please.
And this bill's not moving out of committee today.
But you closed public testimony.
Yeah, we can definitely, I think the bill sponsor is going to reach out and try to get that to us before we move this bill out of committee, is what they're nodding to.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Casella.
Thank you, and I appreciate the opportunity to hear this bill. It goes next to the committee. My staff has been in touch with them, and so we are willing to work with you or whomever to address their concerns. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Casella. Senator Reinbold. All right. With that, we're going to set this set. Thank you to Senator Rivak's office. We're going to set this bill aside, and if members have amendments to this, please let our office know by Wednesday, March 3rd. Close business. Next up, we'll hear an overview of Senate Bill 78, Healthcare Services by Telehealth, by the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Here to speak to the bill today, we have Senator Casella, Chair of the Labor and Commerce Committee, and her staff, Kate McCall. He's here to help present an overview of the bill, and available to answer questions on this bill. We have Director Sarah Chambers, and we have Renee Gayhart from the Department of Health and Social Services as well. And Katie, sorry.
Thank you, Chair Wilson, members of the Senate Health and Social Services Committee. For the record, my name is Katie McCall, staff to Senator Costello. Senate Bill 78, introduced by the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. I will just give you a brief overview of this bill and why it's being introduced by the committee. So, in January of 2021, Governor Dunleavy asked the legislature to extend the public health disaster emergency with the passage of Senate Bill 56. This was a comprehensive bill with numerous provisions, one of which included an extension of the public health disaster emergency. The legislature instead chose to pass a resolution asking the governor to issue a new emergency disaster declaration, as there was not enough time for this bill to go through the legislative process before the expiration of the emergency disaster declaration in effect at the time. In the meantime, the legislature has taken individual sections from the governor's bill and created separate legislation to address those specific provisions. Senate Bill 78 was taken directly from Section 6 of the governor's bill to address the issue of telehealth expansion. The purpose of introducing this bill is to give the legislative branch the opportunity to determine whether or not we need to make our statutes more COVID aware, as opposed to relying on an emergency disaster declaration in order to keep our state operational. The Senate Labor and Commerce Committee intends to rely heavily on the administration to explain why certain sections in the disaster extension bill, such as the provisions now found in Senate Bill 78, are necessary. And I just want to mention that the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee has no position on this bill. The committee is introducing it as a courtesy to the administration due to the expiration of the disaster declaration and the provisions found in that bill that now have nowhere to go and no way to continue.
All right. Thank you. Senator Costello, any?
Through the chair, thank you, Katie, for laying out the background for this legislation. As you mentioned, it's one of several pieces that are going to be moving through the process. I did want to mention for the committee that we have been working with the committee chair and the administration and Sarah Chambers with the in the Department of Commerce, in addition to stakeholders. And the bill in front of you, I think there are changes that can be made to it that would make it something that addresses both temporary needs of the state, but also some long-term changes, as Katie mentioned, to make our statutes more COVID aware. You're probably going to be hearing some testimony today in opposition to this particular version of the bill, but I am very hopeful that based on our conversations with the stakeholders and our interaction with the administration, that we can craft a bill that actually meets the needs of the state as we move more into a recovery phase of the pandemic. Mr. Chair, as you are aware, you've also introduced a measure that's passed the Senate that also makes some of our laws more COVID aware. So I appreciate this opportunity, and I really do appreciate the time the committee is going to spend on this. So thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Senator Begich and Senator Reinbold?
Let me start with a couple, and then I'll turn it over back to you, Mr. Chairman. But I have a number of questions. But first one I have is it's just a stylistic one. I noted there's no either effective date or expiration date in the bill. Was that intentional or?
Katie.
Through the chair, Senator Begich, so one of the discussions I know that the chair of this committee and the chair of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee recently had is adding a sunset date to this bill just to ensure that specifically those providers that are licensed in another jurisdiction, in another state, there's some sort of expiration. If they never become licensed in Alaska, they can continue providing those services through telehealth for however long this bill would go, and then as they're not licensed in Alaska, a sunset date would make it so that they don't continue those services indefinitely without ever being licensed here.
A follow-up to that is, and yet there's no effective date, so it would just be 90 days after the end of the session, I guess, without an effective date. Is that right, Ms. McCall?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, that's something we could certainly look at adding or changing if the committee's willing.
And then my second question is related to what you just stated, Ms. McCall, which is, without an expiration date, obviously there's going to be a loss of professional licensing fees to the state of Alaska. Have you done any analysis of the impact this will have on professional licensing fees and any kind of impact that it would have on current Alaskan resident professional licensed individuals within the health field?
Yeah. Senator Costello.
Thank you. And we do have Sarah Chambers online, Mr. Chair, as you are well aware. Senator Begich, the governor's disaster declaration actually stated in it that there would be no changes to licensing fees with the disaster declaration. And so the intention of the administration would be that there would not be any changes or impacts to the fees. And as you and I both know, the fees are directly related to the activities that have to be pursued by the licensing board. So I had a concern with that. And I think this is a really good opportunity for the administration to explain their rationale for that. The way I understand it is that there are Alaskans currently who have traveled outside the state to receive care. For example, we're aware of an individual whose daughter has cancer. So she had been going outside for care. With COVID and the ability to travel has been curtailed, that individual would like to continue to see that particular provider out of state. So there aren't a lot of Alaskans who were affected by this provision, but there are enough that we feel that it's necessary to allow for that continuum of care to occur. And related to your previous question, I think it would make sense for the bill to become effective immediately and then have that portion of the out-of-state have a sunset date so that we can review it. I do not know what the impact would be on the licensures, but I think perhaps Sarah Chambers could respond to that.
Director Chambers, are you online and with us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Sarah Chambers, Director of the Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing. And Mr. Chairman, or through the chair, we submitted a fiscal note that was indeterminate because of the bill as written would change policy permanently and did not have a sunset date. We couldn't determine the loss of revenue to our self-funding board. Since there's a discussion about it, but this potentially being a short-term bill, as we're in this COVID, still in this season of COVID, then we have probably less concern about the fiscal impact because it is, as Senator Costello mentioned, really focused in on a smaller constituency rather than making a permanent long-term change to do away with licensing for all telemedicine in the state. So right now, as the bill is written, our fiscal note is indeterminate that it would cause a loss of revenue for both the medical and nursing programs.
All right. Senator Begich?
Thank
Senator
you.
Begich?
Was that me? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll save my other questions for, you know, to give everyone a chance. I tend to dominate, so.
Thank you, Senator Begich. Senator Reinbold.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You're good at seeing questions. You're very observant. Anyway, in regards to, first of all, I want to thank the sponsor because that bill was a big bill, 56. We worked on it here, and I think it's amazing that you decided to pull this section out and work on it independently, and I really want to thank you for that. And also your staff, thank you, Katie, you're doing a good job. So where my concern is in regards to this bill is we've worked on telehealth bills in the past, and I think we worked hard. I think it was Vasquez over in the House, I'm not sure who did it in the Senate, but we really worked hard to work with Alaskan physicians on physician preference here so everyone's not just getting on the telephone and calling, you know, people around the nation, and it ended up hurting, you know, Alaskan preference for medical care. So to me, that's really, really important because I think there is, although I very much support telehealth, I think there is nothing like meeting somebody in person and hands-on care and getting to know the dynamics of the family. So I really want sidebars in regards to that. So at some point in time, I want to go back and review our committee of things that we talked about from 56 when we talked about this section, and I definitely would like the opportunity to work on amendments. So with that, I know you're flexible, and I would ask that you be open to that opportunity.
Senator Hughes and Senator Begich.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And yes, Katie, you're doing a good job. And I just got to brag on her a little bit because she grew up in Palmer. So I'm really glad to have you in the building. So just wondering, Katie, we think of this in regard to medical physicians, medical care, but does this also apply to behavior health? I'm aware there are a lot of mental health needs happening right now, and I know it's been the platform for that care during the pandemic, and actually for some families who maybe are in the rural areas, it might be, even when there's not a pandemic, it might be helpful. So I'm just wondering, does this cover a variety of provider types, including behavior health providers?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, this bill specifically does not address behavioral health providers, but actually in a meeting with some members of the administration, that topic came up, and I believe it was DHSS mentioned that the federal public health addresses that issue and that concern. I don't know if maybe Senator Costello wants to speak more on that.
Yes, I can try to attempt to speak to that if the bill sponsor would allow. So through the federal regulations, behavioral health is covered through the federal disaster declaration, and so their guidance through telehealth and some of the waivers are going to continue, and they have assurance from the Biden administration that will actually continue to the end of the calendar year 21. And so although they're not listed in here specifically, that is something that our office is working on so we can match some of the guidance. And so it's very clear that behavioral health is covered and that the state cares about our behavioral health services as well, not just leaving them out to the feds to take care of our Alaskan needs. Senator Hughes.
Yeah, and thank you for looking into that, Mr. Chair, and into the sponsor, because I think just on a regular, pandemic being over, because of our geography and how spread out we are, I don't know if it would be appropriate in this bill to make sure that the behavioral health providers continue to provide services via telehealth platform. I think just makes sense for our state. Is that something that the sponsor would consider, or Mr. Chair, that you're working on once the federal disaster declaration ends?
Yes, that's something that we're looking to continuing as an in-state license process that we would have. My understanding is working with the bill sponsor, or the is that we are looking at trying to have a end date for the out-of-state licensees, and that the regular boards and commissions that have oversight over those medical providers would still have those that jurisdiction over those providers in state, and they still follow the same process they would to become a licensed medical provider in our state.
So you use the word medical provider, and I was asking specifically about behavioral health.
I guess all practitioners of healthcare and behavioral health, and technically dental, would be covered in the healthcare setting as well. Any licensed person that's obligated to provide telehealth is what we're looking at in terms of a definition.
Healthcare provider. Thank
yes.
you.
Senator Baggage.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So just following up on that real quick, understanding the behavioral health federal exceptions will go away at the end of the calendar year because of the federal ones. You're looking at, if I understood you correctly, you're looking at something more comprehensive that would apply to any provision, any provider, right? Is that? Yeah. And then secondarily, in agreement with Senator Reinbold on this, that having parameters around the sideboards, as she put it, is important for protecting our own professional Alaska workforce. So I know that you'll be looking at that as well in terms of expiration dates and licensing issues. And that's the issue in all these questions I have here, which are probably for the department. Sorry, Ms. McCall, probably not for you. But if you have the answers to them, I'd go to you first. And they're, who's supposed to enforce and monitor the health practitioners who are not residing or licensed in the state? That's like one of the questions that I have. And who ensures that they're in good standing? And again, the time parameters in the bill, Ms. McCall, will have an impact on knowing that. And I don't know if the bill doesn't seem to address that. So I don't know what would cover that, or to ensure that they're acting within the scope of their expertise. Or we talked earlier with the medical board about the PDMP, what's the prescribing processes here, because if we have different laws around prescriptions, that could be a factor, and they may not know our laws, so will they be required to be on the register? These are the issues I want to see addressed, and those monitoring costs have to be reflected in a fiscal note at some point. So I don't know if you can answer that. I hope you can, but if not, I think you have about 15 lifelines out there.
Through the chair, Senator Begich, I don't necessarily know where to begin with the things you listed. I know one thing that you mentioned about prescribing. I will just point out that the bill mentions that the services provided have to be within the scope of practice, within the jurisdiction which they're licensed. And just based on conversations I've had with legislative legal about this, the licenses tend to be fairly uniform, and we haven't had a chance to reach out to Ledge Research and look at all of the different provisions as far as licensing goes and where there might be discrepancies. But at least legislative legal wasn't concerned that there would be a major difference in different jurisdictions. But that is something we intend to look at more.
Just as a follow-up on that point. And Ms. McCall, maybe an easier answer might be to simply apply our own standards and then require them to meet our own standards. It might be an easier way to do it. And then we're not lowering our standards or in any other way impacted. There might be a suggestion I would offer. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. All
right. Thank you. At this time, we do have a few folks on public testimony. We're going to go ahead and open up public testimony. First, we have Sarah Hetme. Sarah, if you can state your name for the record and provide about 2 minutes for your testimony.
Absolutely. My name is Sarah Hetemi. I live in Anchorage, and I'm representing myself, and I will be testifying in support of Senate Bill 78. I was really happy to see that Governor Dunleavy asked the legislature to extend the public health disaster emergency through the passage of Senate Bill 56. I was especially thankful for Section 6 of the bill, which related to the issue of telehealth expansion. I believe telemedicine is a big part of the future, and that COVID-19 really helped show that more than ever. We need to empower healthcare providers to deliver telemedicine, as it is a crucial component of healthcare reform that will increase access for all. While telehealth might be a great option for folks like myself who reside in places like Anchorage or Wasilla or Fairbanks, I think it could truly be life-changing in terms of cost savings or immediate care for our rural villages and cities. Individuals that reside in underserved rural and urban communities have to wait longer, travel farther, and ultimately pay more for the health care that they need. We have the ability and opportunity to significantly improve service to these individuals. So personally, it makes little to no sense if we choose not to do so. I think this bill should be with bipartisan support. I'm grateful to the Senate for introducing Senate Bill 78 and giving the legislative branch the opportunity to make our statutes more up-to-date and more COVID-19 aware instead of relying on the emergency declaration alone. That's all I had, so thank you for my time and the opportunity to speak on this today.
Thank you, Sarah, for your testimony today. Next, we have Portia Noble. If you can state your name for the record and plan 2 minutes for your testimony.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Portia E. Noble, and I'm representing myself as an Anchorage resident. Thank you, Senator Wilson, Chair, and the members of this committee for this opportunity to share my full support for Senate Bill 78. I personally believe Alaskans are in need for more accessibility and convenience, not just during a pandemic. In December of 2020, there was over 30 policy think tanks and grassroots organizations united together to urge policymakers across the country to permanently enact and enhance telemedicine capabilities and remove as many barriers as possible. Healthcare groups, clinics, and hospitals in the last 2 years have adapted to innovate and invest in telemedicine capabilities. Pandemic or not, there is a great opportunity to embrace and expand the free market in healthcare. In Alaska specifically, we've seen barriers eliminated due to telemedicine, whether that be that new homeschool mom who's unable to leave her house for a basic prescription refill appointment, or the urban or rural elder who can now have a direct call with their primary doctor. And I do want to address, I agree with Senator Reinbold's statement of having that in-person relationship with your doctor. But then when I see stats that say providers increase the number of weekly telehealth
consultations for Medicare enrollees from 13,000 to 1.7 million. I think that's a really interesting statistic that we should look at and embrace to support our elders in the state of Alaska and across the country. All in all, I encourage this committee to move forward with Senate Bill 78 and other free market health care bills to improve the accessibility and convenience to all Alaskans. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you, Portia, for your testimony today. Next, we have Ryan McKee. Mr. McKee, if you can state your name and affiliation for the record and plan a couple minutes for your testimony.
Yes, my name is Ryan McKee, and I am representing Americans for Prosperity. I appreciate you guys taking this legislation up and giving the public the opportunity to testify on it. So today I'm speaking on behalf of Americans for Prosperity and our hundreds of activists across the state. We strongly encourage support of SB 78 and believe that this is a great step in giving the public an easier way to connect with their doctors. And to Senator Reinbold's point, we do understand that, you know, some people may choose to go out of state, but we also recognize, you know, the senator is a big supporter of choice, whether it be a school choice or other things, and we also would encourage her to, you know, let this be a decision that the individuals have. You know, healthcare is a very important thing, and if an individual feels that they would like to do something out of state or in state, we feel that that is their choice, and we hope the senator would allow them to do that. And also across the nation, more states have been moving to allow telemedicine to be more widely used, and we've seen some great results, as some of the previous callers have stated. And also, Alaska is in a unique position with many rural communities where access to health care is often a struggle. And while telemedicine isn't obviously going to solve all of the problems of getting affordable health care in rural Alaska, it's a great way for the communities to at least gain better access to a lot of the basic health care needs. In addition, this would help many other members of the community. Some of the examples were previously stated, and, you know, parents not having to pack up their kids and take them to the doctors as often. To more extreme situations for, you know, cancer patients, for example, many of them are doing telemedicine appointments right now, and that we feel would be obviously a very big benefit, especially during the pandemic. So with that, you know, telehealth offers a lot of important important alternative to some services, and we feel that it's necessary and that Alaska would definitely gain from having it. So I appreciate your time, and I urge strong support for SB 78, and hopefully this can get moved out of committee and passed as quickly as possible. I appreciate your time.
All right. Thank you, Mr. McKee, for your testimony. We're going to close public testimony, seeing no one else online. That concludes our public testimony and our time for this bill today. We're going to go ahead and set this bill aside, and we'll continue to work on a CS. Please contact our office if you have concerns that we can see if we can wrap into a CS by Wednesday. And if not, we'll try to have amendments to our committee by 5 p.m. on Friday, March 5th. That concludes our business. Are there any closing comments from committee members? Senator Casella.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing all these bills today. I just wanted to say that you're adjourning right on time.
Thank you. Thank you all for attending and for everyone who testified today. And thank you for the bill sponsor and their staff of both bills. And we are adjourned at 3:02 p.m.